And John told me we want our water back, young lady. No, 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 I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
No.
No. Hey guys, if you would, that's one of the things I like to do before I share is if you guys would, y'all do it a little bit different up here anyway. Y'all do like a second of silence or something. But if you would, join me on a moment of silence. I kind of like to do this for me, you know, when I do this. If you would, join me in a moment of silence. Amen. Thank you. And I do that, man, because a lot of times, you know how we are as acts, man. I like to get up and make people laugh and do this and do that. But I kind of like to kind of stay grounded and keep it real. And, you know, if I can touch somebody in here or reach one person and help carry that message to one person, you know, outside of this attic that's staying clean while he's up here in front of you guys tonight, then, you know, the message has been carried. And I've been the vessel that, you know, that that I like to be kind of used as around here. One of the things, I'm going to share a little bit about where I came from and then just kind of go into, you know, like a lot of other stuff. One of the things that I like to share a lot is, for a long time I didn't share this, and I started kind of just sharing it for identification reasons or identity reasons. It's just I was molested when I was 4 years old, like real early on in life, and I also saw God, in my understanding, working early in my life, man. I was like 4 years old and went outside one morning. Something told me to get up, you know. And for the people around here that know me, you know, I live in Atlanta, but I got friends all over the world. And a lot of the people know me. I don't get up early. I work for myself and stuff. I don't really get up early for anybody. Never have, never did. Lived across the street from the elementary school when I was like in elementary school, and I was late to school every morning. But 7 o'clock one morning, man, something told me to get up and go outside and look, and I walked outside and looked, and everything was okay. I was 4 years old. Went back about 10 minutes later. Something was like, go back outside and look. And we lived in a house that there was a little chimney and had a bird nest on the side of it, and it was sparkling fire the second time I went out there. And I kind of just wrapped my little sister up. I had a sister that wasn't quite one. Ran her out and ran, got mom, and we tried to put the fire. But the house burnt to the ground, to say the least. And for me, early on in my life, you know, I had a God of my understanding, and I'd like to share that because I don't, you know, I've gotten into when I initially got clean, I got into wanting to take credit for stuff, and I also gotten into wanting to party and celebrate my clean time and, you know, seeing it washed away. So we went to stay with different people for a little while, and the lady I stayed with, you know, I got molested at 4 years old, and for a long time didn't relate it or tie it into anything, and started getting the step work and doing different things and looking at, you know, how I'm affected in different ways. You know, it was, I don't know, it was just real beneficial to get here and start doing some things. And one of the things, I got a 5-year-old, man, and I was kind of getting on to him the other day about some stuff. And I was born in Albany, South Georgia. And I rode by this school, this elementary school. And I says, he asked me, Dad, what's this thing right here? And I was like, oh, that's a walkway to the elementary school. And I was like, matter of fact, John, I went to that elementary school and they didn't let me. I couldn't go back. They kicked me out because I was being bad. I was doing stuff like you're doing in school, you know, and da da da. And he's like, so what were you doing, Dad? And I was like, well, I was doing things I probably shouldn't have been doing. And he's like, what, you hit somebody? I was like, well, not really. Just shoot him. What'd you do, Dad? You know, real inquisitive. And I was like, well, I kind of hit him, but I hit him with something. And what I done was I came up, man, in kind of a rough area and rough neighborhood. And what I did was I baited a kid. The kid was kind of hassling me, and I baited him up to the pencil shop, sharpened the pencil, stuck him in the arm with it, and broke it off in his arm. You know, and to me, that was kind of how I carried. You know, that's I grew up kind of like that. You know, and so I thought the whole world kind of dealt with it. You know, you deal with it like this. You know what I mean? You squash it right here, right now, and you know, I couldn't go back to that. 7 years old. You know, your kid can never come out of school again. You know, that kind of stuff, And one of the things that I started using, the first time I used it was drug alcohol. I used it with my own man real early on at the age of 12. And I also relapsed later on with my pops, you know what I mean? He was my drinking buddy. And one of the things, I don't know, I remember coming here and doing a lot of different things and getting involved in a lot of different things and getting in a world of trouble, man. And I remember being a victim for a long time. You know, and And I don't want to get into a lot of that stuff I did, a lot of hurt stuff, a lot of stuff. One of the things I believe is we all come here for different reasons. I mean, come from different places, but I think we all come here out of pain. You know, and I had a kid one day, his mom asked me and another guy to go talk to him. And we talked to him, like 18-year-old kid, and he was like, man, I ain't in no pain like that. And I was like, well, you know, there's some pain going on, you know what I mean? The whole family and everybody else was in some serious pain from him, you know. So in some shape, form, or fashion, I think we come here out of pain, you know. And this disease is, to me, it's a tremendous disease. You know, we don't talk about it quite enough, how bad it is, and we don't write about it quite enough, but thank God. This program is larger than this disease is, you know. You know, me and another addict, I can get over anything. And for a long time, I came around. And, you know, when I got here, I came in and I came in for about 3 or 4 years. I didn't laugh or didn't cry, you know, last 3 or 4 years of my using, man. And it was my drug of choice pretty much just kind of, you know, took every emotion I had. And I remember, and I said this earlier today, but my brother, you know, I was talking to him. I was like, listen, man, I need a couple $100 for something. And I'm going to skip over all this stuff, but I'm going to just share this. And this is kind of the incident that brought me in. I said, I need a couple $100. And he told me where to look. And he had 30 of them in there. I was like, he's got 30 $100 bills in here, and I'm going to take 10 of them, and I'm going to make me a bunch of money back, and I'm going to give him his 10 back. And needless to say, you know, I wasn't my best customer at that point. I was my only customer. You know, I was running people away any kind of way I needed to run them away, you know what I mean? And it was like the few people that would still come around. And a few days later, he was like, listen, man, I need my money back. And I was in the middle of a run, you know, I was going back to the back room to get some more money to do some stuff. And I had his money back there, but I only had like a couple $100 more than that. So it was like, you know, that wasn't enough to go around, you know. It was like, ain't enough to go around, buddy. You know, I'll be out too quick by the time I give you yours. But, you know, and my whole family, man, I was pretty much like, I mean, I come from a wonderful family, man. Everybody, I was the only one. I had an older brother that used, and he, you know, went off to somewhere else. And, you know, on Sunday mornings, okay, I'm going to go here and stop using, you know. And I tried that, man, but I was, like, using before and after and everything. It was, like, didn't work for me. But got a wonderful family, man. The whole family, we got into a fist fight. And at this point, we got into a fist fight, and I kind of just stood up, and I pushed him off, and I backed up. And I pulled my shirt up, and I kind of spun around. I said, listen, man, you can take one of these, or you can take that little knife you got and do me a tremendous favor. You know, I just put my hand behind my back. I says, you know, you can take and slit my throat, man. It'll be the best favor you can do me and all. I mean, everybody was crying and, you know, upset and stuff. And I didn't have an emotion left, man. I just, you know, I says, well, you know, if you're going to sit there, if this dance is over, I need to get by you. And I went by him and I, you know, went left and finished doing my thing, man. Like a couple of days later, you know, I was just the hurt and the pain and all that in my folks' eyes, man. It was just like I couldn't get clean for me at the time, but it was just like, man, life don't supposed to be like this. I don't supposed to bring all this pain in these people's lives. You know, they don't deserve it and all. And I went in and I says, Dad, man, can you come take me up to the hospital, you know, a couple of days later? And he was like, what? You know, and he kind of ran by me and he ran to my brother's room. Tim, you okay? You all right? Like that. And my brother was like trying to get some sleep. He was like, yeah, man, I just want some sleep. And he was like, you okay? You okay? Like that. And he's like, yeah, damn sleepy. Can you, you know, let me get some sleep. And he came back and he's like, because he thought I'd done something to him. And he came back and he says, what's going on? And I was like, man, out of all the times that I called people and tried to do this and tried to do that, I was like, I need some help. And I was like, I can't do this. I need some help. And I was so ignorant to this disease and all that stuff, man. I had a ball of drugs, man. And I was like, okay, we'll top this off, and then you drive me up to the facility, man. And I was like, so, you know, it was just so crazy back then. But he took me up there, man, and I stayed. Like, that night I got there, I remember getting in. I was tired because I'd been going about 4 days, man. I was just bent. I was burnt out, man. And this guy come up. You know how when you're new and people try to hug you, you know, it's like, just kind of walked in and I threw that shoulder on him and did a little one-on thing like that, man. He was like, well, listen, we're going to these meetings tonight, man. You really need to come to this meeting. And I was like, yeah, man, that's good for you guys. I'm tired. I've been running for 4 days. I hadn't got any sleep. And I ain't, you know, go ahead on. Tell me about it when you come back. And they, you know, and he stayed on me and stayed on me and stayed on me. And I was like, listen, man, if I go, will you, like, leave me alone the duration that I'm in here? And he's like, yeah. And I went that night, man. And For me, it was awesome because the way I was when I used the anger and the hurt people and the, you know, everything was a confrontation with me. And if you came up and say, listen, Cecil, man, we think you need some help and we know this place, you know, you were in a world of trouble. You know what I mean? And you were just trying to help me. You were trying to come to me out of love. And some of the people after I got clean, I was like, man, why didn't you ever say anything to me? And I was like, man, we could. And you were like, we was real reluctant to go up because we didn't know, you know, just the internal anger and the internal frustration and just, you know, all the hurt was, you know, it would come out and people just wouldn't tell me about, you know, any kind of help or anything like that. And for me to finally, so, and I say that to say this, I didn't know there was a choice, you know what I mean? I didn't know there were, you know, I lost a lot of people, you know, to use in some shape, form, or fashion. So I thought, you know, either you did it till you die or you kill yourself, you know. And then I was, you know, at one of those, you know, I was doing things where, all right, you know, I'm going to go get this dealer, and, you know, either he's going to kill me or I'm going to take what he's got. And that kind of stuff is where I came from, you know what I mean? It's just like, you know, when it seemed a lot better to not be alive than to be alive, you know what I mean? It seems a lot easier, but, you know, I didn't have the balls to take my life, you know, so being brought up the way I was, it was like a lot of stuff tied in. But one of the things I thought about last night, I was talking to, I was laughing and talking with, I got a friend, Mr. Bill, the guy that does jury in Hamilton. I was laughing and talking with him, and my sponsor, and I was, we were just talking. I said, you know what, man, it's like one of the things, you know, this topic called hurt people, but we, you know, for me, laughter these days, man, it's like tremendous. You know, we were laughing and cutting up about everything, and what kept coming into my mind was healing people help heal people. You know what I mean? And Hamilton was one of the people I met at about 6 months clean, man. And people like that kind of helped introduce me to the steps and get me into this program. And one of the things I did early on, man, I was still real angry, you know, and I was like, you know, wouldn't swap numbers with people, wouldn't do, you know, wouldn't, no coffee for me and no, none of this. I want to hang out with your nerds. I don't want nothing to do with you. You know, and I kept that attitude, you know. And I stayed clean for a little while. But needless to say, man, that indifference and intolerance, I was gone. You know, I got about 30 or 40 days, man. And it was like, you know, a little 30-day wonder, renew it all. And I was back out here like a rocket. And I have 12 white chips. But the last one I picked up, you know, my last day of usage was October 31st of 1986. So, you know, I'm a miracle with it, you know. You know, and I remember still being a victim and still I wanted to be understood and that kind of stuff. And one of the people that was most special to me was one of the ones that I was angriest at for whatever, for addiction. You know, my addiction was ruling my life. So, and that was my old man. You know, we went to, he was real verbal abusive a lot of times, you know what I mean? And I didn't appreciate that and this and that. And I remember starting to write on the steps and stuff. And I was like, man, I don't care what. He's not going on my 8-step list and blah, 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 blah. And I remember doing a 4-step. I did that with my sponsor. And I just really started looking at me and started looking at accountability. You know what I mean? What I'm accountable for. And if I'm going to get any better, I can't look at anyone outside of myself. You know, and his name was right near the top of the list, man. And to make a long story short with a lot of that, my sponsor had me to go back also and say, you know, all right, well, I made my amends, but I also had to speak with him about something that was eating me up inside, was the verbal abuse and stuff, and just kind of go back and talk to him about it and be open with him with it, you know what I mean? Whereas I can't, like, have a lot of stuff going on and be like, okay, well, I can't talk to him. You know what I mean? I talk to anybody about anything. And one of the things I did was talk to him. And it opened up a tremendous... He was one of my best friends early on, and he became my best friend again, you know what I mean, for the last 10 years, you know, up until April 9th, 1997. I got a phone call. He died in a car wreck, you know, And one of the things with me is like I was so grateful that, you know, for 11 years I regained that friendship, you know what I mean, instead of me harboring hate, harboring resentments, and being a victim and this and that, you know, I was able to look at me and start to get better. And I worked in a place, man, it was like 700 people, and I remember thinking, man, all these assholes in here, everybody's dickhead, you know, everybody was something, you know, and I remember getting clean, and I thought, man, these people are nice, man. There's a lot of nice people, you know. And I thought, I'm like, well, maybe it wasn't them at all, you know what I mean? Which it wasn't, you know. It wasn't them at all, you know. So, you know, I was doing an H&I meeting one time, and one of the things, my addiction, you know, I lost a lot of friends that didn't go through half as much as I did. So I decided, okay, I'm gonna kind of tone my story down whenever I go in these H&I meetings, went in this one kid, man. Actually, we shared and went around a little panel, and this kid raised his hand, stood up, because they had burned out all the all the brain cells. I didn't remember anybody. He stood up and he was like, then my name wasn't CSA at the time, it was just Red. He was like, Red, man, you were worse than anybody. We had bets on you. We knew you were dead, man. I lost a bet on you, you know, and he kept just kind of on and on about it. And one of the things I think with that, man, if this addict can come here and stay clean, any addict can, you know what I mean? I think any addict can, you know, and that's our message. You know, I got into some stuff not so long ago with somebody about, you know, willingness, you know, my addiction's willingness is always right here. So if mine's right here, you know, I'm screwed. You know, I don't stand a chance in hell. So I need to get up here. You know what I mean? And one of the ways I do that, you know what I mean, is the we of the program. It's the we of the program. You know, it's I can't say enough for it. You know, I came back in. I remember going back out and losing. I stayed out 60 days, and I lost 61 pounds in those 60 days. And one of the things that happened with that, though, was and I never was big. I mean, I was one. I mean, I'm big as I ever been by far now, but I didn't have 61 pounds to lose back then, you know. Y'all laughing like, I know what he was doing. But anyway, one of the last people that tried to get me to do something, he took, and I was headed to a treatment facility at the time, he said, listen, man, it's $1,000 worth, just give me $500 Friday, and I stood there for a second, and I was in my car with it running, man, and I just remember hitting the gas, and I looked at the man, and he was like this, he was doing this number, he was holding his foot, I ran over his foot, man, but for me, after coming back and losing that 60 pounds and seeing what this disease, just getting a little inkling of what this disease was really all about, I was like, to me, he might as well have been pointing a gun at my temple. You know what I mean? Which is what it was, man. And I've done some drastic things to go to different lengths to stay clean. But one of the things I'm going to share about a minute before I get up, and I just really love hearing other people share what they had to share because, you know, we have our own knowledge, but when I hear other people, it's just like, you know, it's getting real full off of it. But the healing people heal people thing, man, it's just like I can't say enough about, you know, the 12 steps. I was at a meeting in Atlanta one time, and these four guys came up from different countries, and they shared how hard it was for them to get clean. Like, if people knew they were going to NA meetings, or if they were addicts, they'd get beat up and this kind of stuff. And I thought, man, people have come here and paved ways for us, and all I got to do is make a phone call, hop in a car. I mean, it's so simple. It is so simple, you know, but I would complicate the hell out of it. And one of the first things I did when I came back was like, listen, man, I swapped numbers with everybody. You know, I'm like, I went from, you know, I don't have a phone, don't give me a number, I can, you know, to swapping numbers and saying, you know, what is this sponsorship thing? You know, where are we going for coffee tonight? You know, I like bowling. Let's go bowling, you know. And just, you know, everything I needed to do. And one of the things I followed up with was like, you know, how can I give back? You know, y'all were talking about these meetings and stuff. And you know how they do you, man. If you knew, they like, oh, come with us Sunday morning, you know, and we went to this area meeting and all. And I walked out of the area H&I chair, you know what I mean, at 91 Days Clean, you know. And one of the things with that, though, is we was in an area where there wasn't a lot of clean time at the time, you know, and we went to a couple of different places where people spoke about, you know, we were talking about other fellowships and stuff like that being strong, but ours wasn't that strong. And the message we kept hearing was, you know, if you're willing to commit, like those people were willing to commit, this fellowship would be strong. And the 12 of us that were around there committed, man. And not long at all, the fire marshals were like, listen, there's 115 of y'all in this meeting tonight. You got to find somewhere else to meet, you know. And for me to stand, I can't put in words just the beauty of the growth of that commitment. You know, it was tremendous. And, you know, I started giving back. I started doing H&I work. I started working on me and started doing, you know, all the suggestions. I didn't care what decision I wanted to make. I used to kind of monitor my decisions, man. I guarantee you 98% of my thoughts would have gotten me in a world of trouble if I would have acted out impulsively on them. You know, and so it's like I ran everything by people, man. It was like, wait a minute, let me call my sponsor. Where is he going? Let me call my sponsor. And something else I like to do, you know, before any conversation, you know, that's funny. We had some stuff going on today, and I was like, listen, guys, we need to take some quiet time, say a prayer because, you know, some stuff got, you know, I was sitting there kind of like, and it just got, you know, there's a lot of love. There's four or five of us. A lot of love was in the room, but when it comes to communicating, sometimes I think it get out of way, you know, it's like, la, la, la. But I had about 6 months clean. Someone, like, I wasn't used to being agitated, and someone was agitating me, and I stayed away from the meetings for about 4 or 5 days, and I finally came back, and he still was kind of doing it, and I shared something that I know somebody would go, he walked outside, I was like, I'm going to share this, because I know they'll go tell him, and, you know, it's okay, and he came up to me after the meeting and said something, and, you know, I kind of promptly backed up about 4 steps and said whatever I said and said, you know, let's get this over with like that. And needless to say, it's not a proud moment, but I share this because it is so important to me today. It's like, and, you know, and I was packing and I was ready to do it. I was 6 months removed from using, so all that stuff was still the norm for me. And, you know, and I was ready to, like, just end it right there. You know, like, you know, I'll take care of this. And one of the things I did, though, he's like, hold on. And he went outside and, he went outside, and when he left, I said a prayer, man. I was like, please, God, don't let me kill this kid. Please. I just, you know, prayed. And anytime I want to talk to anybody now about anything, because like today, man, it was the smallest little thing, but left to me and my devices, you know, I like to say, it's like you get blown up. So I always say a little prayer before confronting people about anything, you know. And it worked tremendously then, you know. It was like that was 14 years ago. It worked then, and it works now. You know, I can't really tell you how things would have blown up if I don't, because I just choose to pray about it. Now, any little thing, you know, and it's kind of like I took these fire courses one time, and this guy says, you know, any major fire that goes on normally, there ain't real big things wrong. There's normally about 5 or 10 teeny things wrong. You know, so, and they don't get kind of taken care of, and you got a massive fire in your hand or whatever. And that, to me, that's kind of like my recovery, man. I'll say a little moment of silence and a heartbeat because, you know, I came here praying not to wake up. You know what I mean? It's like I came here on a prayer, just don't let me wake up. And one of the things I also do now is I just do gratitude prayers with my higher power, you know, because my higher power knows better. You know, what I need than I do, I think. You know what I mean? You know, because I know you guys probably going through this where you pray for things and you had to pray for its removal later on and stuff like that. So one of the things I do, man, is just I do gratitude prayers and I try to say a little prayer before confronting anybody about anything. One other thing I'll say for 2 minutes is, you know, one of the things I try to do also, man, I remember getting ready to do a 6-step with a sponsor and talking about, I don't know if I'm entirely ready to do this, you know what I mean? Because I was like having sex with everybody that, you know, every newcomer girl that moved. And one of the things I start, you know, about 13 years ago is like, I chose not to mess with newcomer females, you know. And we laugh about it, but one of the things they always say down in Greenville, yeah, hey, getting them white, you know, if you mess with a newcomer female, you're getting them white, he's still shaking, huh? I think it's extremely important for us, you know, and this is my opinion, man, but I think it's extremely important, you know, for us to give newcomers room to grow and, you know what I mean, give them some room to grow and let them do, you know, to me, there's no rationalization for me today to run out and pick up any new person. And I just felt real obligated to say that. And part of it's got a lot to do with, you know, a lot of the stuff that I've been seeing and, you know, and people sometimes get mad with me. And I know the newcomer don't want me to be their spokesperson, but, you know, I think, you know, I do think we need to take a look at, you know, allowing them to come in here and focus on themselves and work on themselves. And I love you guys. And thanks to the committee and thanks for all you guys.
For y'all next speaker, Joan. I'm an addict named Joan. All right, Tidewater area in the house. Okay, I'm really overwhelmed, and I'll get to that, you know, in a few minutes, because I don't want to get too emotional right now, because I want to, you know, get to where I need to go and talk about hurt people. Just a little bit, I need to identify in so the newcomer know that I didn't come in looking this good. You know, growing up, I had great parents, mom, dad, 7 children. We had everything we needed to become a productive member of society. Never wanted for anything. Had a nice house to live in, clothes to wear, church on Sunday, school was a requirement. 3 meals or more a day, summer vacation. I mean, everything growing up to become a productive member of society. And I say that to say it doesn't matter where you come from, who you are, who's your connections, how much or how little you have. The bottom line is that the disease will get anybody. The rich, the poor, the black, the white, the Chinese, they're getting them too now. Took me a long time before I saw one of them in here. You know? And when I did, I would say, uh-huh. You know? And so that kind of like eliminate, you know, your excuses for saying that you don't belong. You know, and I like to say to the newcomer that it's important that you don't compare out either. You know how you come in and you hear somebody share, and you hear a lot of your not yet. So you easily identify out. To not understand that if you don't surrender, you eligible. You eligible to shoot some dope in your groin. You eligible to shoot some of that shit in your forehead. I heard that they do it like that. You know, because it's really easy to compare out when you still got a little something. You know how you come in and you still got the house, and maybe, you know, Sammy Sue is staying in the shelter. So Sammy belong here because I still got a house. You know, the key and everything. But you ain't telling nobody, ain't no running water in it. That you don't have no life. You're strictly on candles. You know, or the brother or sister that come in and still got the little government job. You know, it's hard to get fired off the government. Or, you know, and maybe somebody else is like working at McDonald's or something, and so you tend to think you're a little better off. You know, but you're not telling nobody that you've been in the government 20 years and you don't have no leave. And that you're taking 3-hour lunch breaks because you're stuck in the crack house. Or you're stuck trying to get a hit. And that it's 90 degrees and when you go back to work, you can't take your suit coat jacket off because you got a blood-stained shirt. Please don't compare out. All that you haven't done, you don't surrender, you're eligible. And it's for real, too. We got some people that tried it. And by the grace, they made it back and they told us that they picked up where they left off. So, come on in. Take your little seat. Go ahead and cry. Snot and whine. Because we had to, too. We don't have that much sympathy. We got a lot of love. Tough love. Good love. And the lies dead, we do recover. You know, so I can remember when my addiction probably started. Now, I didn't know what was going on in the beginning. You know, because when you're early in that addiction, you kind of can't see the horrors of addiction. Because early on, you got it good, like Robin Hood. You know, your stuff is sticking and hitting like Popeye's chicken, you know. That thing like you pass me by, you won't get high. I mean, you got it going on. So you really can't see what's going to happen. Because I know that if I knew that when I took that first fix, that I was going to want some more over and over again, I wouldn't have done it. Trust me. But after I got caught up, because see what happened for me, I started going to the go-go. D.C., we got the go-go in D.C. You know, we go see Chuck Brown. And my mother was saying, come in by 12. I told her, Chuck don't come on to 12. What? I say, honey, look. And she say she didn't know Chuck. She really didn't care about Chuck. I just need to get in by 12. And so, of course, early on, I would do that. But eventually, I started to rebel. And so I would stay out until eventually I moved out just to be a Chuck groupie, you know. And I believe that's when the process started because I got attracted to hustlers. You know, I like the guys that got the pinky ring and driving the nice car, you know, issuing out the stuff. You know, got the good bankroll, taking you to Crisville to eat and all that good stuff. And then I didn't know I was getting set up to be turned out. Okay. And what happened was I started to indulge with what I was selling. And then eventually, every day I woke up, I had to have something to change my mood. And I believe at that point, that's when the hurt people came into play. Because by the time I got caught up in the grip, I didn't care what I was doing. And the bottom line, most of my victims was my family members. They were easy prey. Because when at the end of the road, I was the addict that woke up every single day having to have something to change my mood. And trust me, at the end, it wasn't about a drug of choice. It didn't matter. In the beginning, of course, I had a drug of choice. You know, I only do this. No, I don't do that. At the end, look. If someone would have told me to mix rat poison and tea together and it would get me high, honey, I'd have been mixing up some shit, okay? Tell you something good. You know, and so I started that vicious cycle, you know, of trying to catch up with that first high that I would never, ever feel again. You know, and so little by little, I started seeing things deteriorate. You know, first I had a job, then the job had to go, was in the way. Because what ended up happening is I got stuck on the strip, on the corner, couldn't move because I thought I was going to miss something. So at the end, it wasn't even about a whole bag. It was just about a one-on-one. It was just about just give me a little something, just enough to tighten up the bowels so I could figure out where I could get something. And see, I would go to my parents' house. See, I started hurting them early. See, I would go to my parents' house, wait until they go to sleep. And see, I was like an old cruddy rat. When they go to sleep, I crawl on the floor like a rat. You know how a rat hears something, it'll stop? Or either it'll back out the room. It says that you start to live like an animal. And so when I figure out they be asleep again, you know, I commence to go ahead in and get the money from under the carpet. And then I go and use, and then the next day I'm the one trying to help them find it. I be saying, you know, who did that? You know, that's really rotten. You know. And the whole time in my mind, I'm trying to figure out how I can get some more. Because, see, I was an addict that could never save nothing for the next day. I could be in oblivion. If I knew it was there, it must go. And then once I use it all, I say, well, I'm going to stay woke. The high lay, I'm going to stay woke till tomorrow morning. Girl, when I woke up, I done slobbed. The high was gone. And so I'd be right back out to hurt people. You know, I can remember taking my son to my mother's house for a visit because I got set out. Took him to school one day, and within 20 minutes, I came back and everything was on the curb. Now, I didn't know it was mine. Because I rolled by and I said, somebody got set out. So as I kept riding, I saw some stuff that looked like mine. So I only found out that it was mine. And so I say, okay, all right, I'm going to work it out. So I went to my mother's house, took my son there, said, look, I'm going to the store, I'll be back. And my mom is like real thorough. She said, I'm going to tell you something. You leave the boy here, you better come back to get him, or I will be looking for you. Of course, I knew she could look all she wanted to. I wasn't coming back. Where was I going to take him? And so I left him there, and I went on out to come back in a couple of hours. But I was gone for days, weeks, months, years. Couldn't make it back. I can remember carrying another baby for 9 months, getting no prenatal care, using drugs on top of it. And my water broke. I was on 7 and T in a pool room. Went to the hospital. My disease say, leave it there. Now, where you going with that? You got things to do. So I said, all right, left it there. Went on about my business. You know, and early on, I wouldn't share stuff like that because I thought I was unique. That no other woman did that. Only to find out that we're more alike than different. More alike than different. And so I just kept going and kept going and kept going until eventually I got rescued. You know, I sold narcotics to the police. Now, I was a good hustler, so I thought. But good hustlers don't pull the police, do they? Damn. And early on, I wouldn't sell nothing to nobody I didn't know. That was the principle. That was on the street. You don't do that. But at the end, come on now. I had a beat bag. I had to get somebody. So at this time, I was flagging them down. So they say this power works long before you know it. But I didn't know it. Because one, I didn't know I had the disease of addiction. I didn't know. If I knew that I had the disease of addiction, I probably would have been out. I can remember kicking for 3 days because I couldn't get nothing else. And on the fourth day, somebody knocked. Somebody, they just want to cut up. I'm going to kick you something, sis. I let them in. If I knew I had the disease of addiction, man, I'd have put a basic text on the door. I'd have put a sign on the door. Say, I don't use in this house no more. But because I didn't know, I always started the vicious cycle over and over again. That's why it's important to know what you're working with, newcomer. That disease that's compulsive and obsessive. You know, one too many, 1,000 never enough. You know what I'm saying? And so when I went to jail, because I pleaded not guilty, first of all. And they had a little jury trial. The trial lasted about 5 minutes. They say they had the evidence. The beat bag, they said it was 99% pure. Whatever. I said, look. Y'all got my stuff mixed up with somebody else. I know that was a beat bag. So I got stepped back. My first time being locked up, I was about 28 years old. I went over to jail. Still didn't know I had the disease of addiction. Of course, I did the dope ring thing. God, get me out of this. I won't do nothing else. You know how you begin to bargain with God once you're in trouble? You begin to negotiate. You know, and so I'm over there 30 days kicking, you know, and after about 2 weeks, I was eating 3 trays. When I went in, I wore like about 117, And then in about 3 weeks, I was hitting the stick and everything was out. Boom, you know, hey, I was back to normal, so I thought. You know. And so when I went back for sentencing, I got probation. But because I didn't know I had a disease of addiction, I went right back. I said, well, I'm going to drink a little Hennessy and Coke this time. I ain't going to do no drugs. To find out that alcohol is a drug. That one leads you right back to the whatever. And so, of course, you know, I sold dope to the police again. I say, my career is over. You know? But you know what? Again, this power working. Because this time when I got locked up, that night I got bonded out. And I went to see the attorney, and he said, go to treatment or go to jail. Now, in my mind, I was only going to treatment, not to go to jail. Not even looking at the fact that I was weighing 117 pounds. Two children that I wasn't responsible for. No longer a daughter to my mother. No fixed address. 30 years old. Had nothing to show for being an adult. But in my mind, I was only going to treatment, not to go to jail. Denial will keep you stuck. Denial will keep you thinking that you're a little better off than you really are. You know how you think something's going to work, and it ain't? So I say, I'll go to treatment, not to go to jail. But little did I know, H&I subcommittee of the D.C. area came up and put the message. You know? And the guy say the message is hope. That any addict could stop using. And when he said that, I kind of scooted up in my seat. I'm like, where they at? Because everything and everybody I affiliated myself with did something wrong. Something wrong. And so they said, okay, try Narcotics Anonymous. And so I was born in Narcotics Anonymous. I don't know about no other anonymous. And that's not taking anything away because it wasn't Alcoholics Anonymous. We would not be started. So I'm not even bashing that. I'm just telling you where I grew up at. And so I started going to meetings, and things started to happen. Of course, I got clean, and I told you I gained some weight. Then I went and moved out to the treatment center, and I got me an apartment. I got cable. I got a Blockbuster's card. I got a Most card. You know how when you go out to eat, you got to have your Most card. So you can tell everybody in the car, let me stop and get $20 off the machine. Not even telling them you only had 40 in there. And of course, everything is not completed until I get my N.A. jewelry. You know, my N.A. earrings. My N.A. Gold medallion. My N.A. belt buckle. My N.A. ring. And I must have my key tags from here to here. Let everybody know how much clean time I have. And, of course, at this time, in my mind, of course, staying clean must come first. You know, every clean day is a successful day, no matter what happens. But I'm here to report it's more to it than just not using. Because if it wasn't, we would only have step one. But as a result of, clearly, my unwillingness to go on with the program, I endured a lot of pain. Not only on me, but on others. You know, as a result of my not wanting to do something different, I was vicious. You know, starting out in recovery, you get your little service positions and stuff. So my first one was a coffee maker. And I did real good at the coffee. Although it was water and instant, but I did good. You know, I got there early, and I heated up the water. And when people came in, it was ready. But then I got crazy because I started controlling the coffee room. You know, I was like standing at the door monitoring people coming in for coffee. And so if you made your coffee and you spilled anything, oh, you were going to get that shit up, okay? Excuse me, did you spill that? And if you got away, I was coming to get you. Okay? And so after a while, people didn't even want no damn coffee. Girl, they were stopping at the 7-Eleven. So they come to the meeting and say, who making the coffee? They say, Joan. They say, all right. You know, and I'm just telling you how, you know, sometimes, you know, you're hurting people. You know, and when this program is a symbol of being loving and caring, you know, because we've been beat up enough, you know, prior to coming up in here. You know, but because I was unwilling to go on with the program, I inflicted a lot of pain on people. And that's why I'm so overwhelmed. I'm so overwhelmed with the support because I know it's people in here that I hurt. I know it. And it ain't all the time with what I say. It's how the fuck I look. When I'm unwilling to give a smile. And my rationale is just me. That's my rationale. Accept me as I am and all that when I know that I could be different. It has nothing to do. Love me unconditionally. That's in this room right now. Because I could be a mean cookie. And a lot of times when I'm hurting, I kill. I kill people. You know, like in the sixth step when they say you become entirely ready. And the bottom line is that when I'm resenting you, for whatever reason, you know, I'm drinking the poison, but I want to kill you. And the whole time, I'm dying. It's been times in this program. That I have treated people so bad. And all they wanted was a hug. And what I would do, what I would do, what I will do, instead of giving them a hug, I look the other way. But you know what? When I go home, I'm stuck with me. As a result of my hurting people, it's a lady that I grew up with. 30 years. We're not friends anymore. It is a direct result of me. I want to say she got to look at her part. But we talking about me hurting people. And as a result of my being unwilling to surrender, just before coming into the meeting, I heard one of my sponsees. She wanted to give me a hug, and I told her she smelled like cigarettes. And her response was, "You doing the right workshop." And after the fact, because sometimes you can't even mend something after the fact. The damage been done. And after the fact, I want to be loving and caring. Give me a hug. Enough is enough. I know I've changed. Now, trust me. I've changed. But I'm still changing. And the thing about it is that because I am so, I don't want to say arrogant, because I am so, because I want to be so hard, you know, it people stay away when they probably want to come. But because I got a shield up, and another thing is that, you know, I'm coming up on 16 years, and a lot of times, that could be a good thing and that could be a bad thing, because people expect you to be someplace. And so when I fall short, you're disappointed, you know? And when they asked me to do this workshop, I don't know if they thought I was going to say no or what. I said, I could pretty much share on anything. It applies to me. You know what I'm saying? And so I said, you know, I'll come and I ask my higher power to do what he please. Just take me out of the way. You know, let me expose, you know, who I am. You know what I'm saying? But I ask you in the D.C. area, don't give up on me. In closing, that the love is unconditional because of the people that's in the room from my area. Overwhelmed. Thanks for letting me share. Family, I'm adding, I'm an addy. We want to thank our good speakers. Somebody got Jeff for today? Oh, the meeting is still open. We have 15 minutes.
Hi, my name is Cheryl, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. Hey,